This episode of Dean Bakari's Meaningful Show is brought to you by Flashbooks, where you can get best-selling business and self-improvement book summaries that you can read or listen to in under 20 minutes. To learn more and get started for just a buck today, visit www.getflashnotes.com. Welcome to the Meaningful Show podcast, where every single week we work to bring you an inspiring insight, idea, or interview to help you live better, work better, and be better both in life and in business. Brought to you by MeaningfulHQ.com, we've got one very simple goal here on this show, and that is to help you do more of what matters and less of what doesn't. I'm your host, Dean Bakari, and if you're ready, then I'm ready. So let's get into it. Hey, what's up? It's Dean Bakari coming back at you with another episode of the podcast. And today I am excited because we have a guest with us here on the show. You know, a while back, a listener wrote in asking about what I thought was the single most powerful skill that he could work on developing if he wanted to make dramatic changes to improve himself, both personally as well as professionally. And you know what my answer was? My answer was to learn the skill of effectively communicating your ideas to other people. And the reason I think that's so important is because a large part of how successful we're going to be, both in life as well as in business, depends upon taking what we've got stored in our heads and our hearts and figuring out how to put that into the heads and hearts of other people. So if that's a skill that you'd like to learn more about, then you are in luck, my friend, because today I am joined by Carmine Gallo, who's literally made a career out of helping people share their stories in the most inspiring and empowering way possible. He's the author of a string of best-selling books, including the wildly popular book, Talk Like TED. And today, he's here to talk with us about his new book, The Storyteller's Secret, which is all about the science of crafting compelling stories that can help you inspire, instruct, and drive positive change in your career, your business, even your life. So, Carmine, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, and thanks for inviting me, Dean. That was an excellent introduction. Best I've heard.
Well, that's good to hear. So, let's just dive right in. Why do you think stories are so effective, Carmine, at helping people get their ideas across?
Stories are effective, Dean, because the most successful leaders who I know in a wide variety of fields, from entrepreneurship to leading global brands to venture capital, they're all telling me the same thing. So at some point, I had to start listening to them. When a guy like Michael Moritz, who is the senior partner and venture capitalist at Sequoia Capital, who invested in a company called Google, one of the first investors. When he, as a former journalist, tells me that great leaders do two things well. They have a clear sense of vision and they communicate it well.
Yeah.
Ah, he's onto something. Now, communication, we know, is, like you said, and you said very eloquently, is a career advantage. I think it's the single most important skill that will help you stand apart in a sea of ideas. Right. But what does it mean? What does that mean, good communication? Well, when I wrote Talk Like TED, I wanted to focus on some of the what I consider the gold standard of communication, which is these TED conferences.
Right.
And in one chapter in particular, was on storytelling. So I was not intending to write a whole book just on storytelling. And then I went to a conference with Vinod Khosla. Vinod Khosla asked me to speak at a conference. Vinod Khosla is a billionaire venture capital investor. At the conference, just to put this in perspective, Bill Gates, one of his best friends, was there. Tony Blair, the former Prime Minister of England, was there. Sergey Brin and Larry Page from Google were there. That's how influential Vinod Khosla is. And you know what he said? It's not enough to have facts on your side. You have to do storytelling. That's what he told the young entrepreneurs in the audience that day. Not too long after I talked to Vinod Khosla, another venture capitalist named Ben Horowitz, who is a very well-known venture capitalist, told a conference of entrepreneurs, storytelling is the most underrated skill.
Yeah.
Not too long after that, there were a few people on Shark Tank that were pitching Barbara Corcoran. I'm sure all your listeners know Shark Tank.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Of course.
And she said, storytelling is everything. Yeah. Show me an MBA and your sales numbers. That's fine. But tell me a great story and we'll talk. At some point, storytelling was such a part of my life, and I heard it every single day from some of the great leaders of our time, even Richard Branson, who said, who literally gathers his team around a campfire at his home on Necker Island to share stories. Because he said storytelling is the, I'm sure you read that part. So I have a whole chapter on Richard. Yeah. Storytelling, he said, is the best way to come up with new ideas. So at some point, I had to realize that, gee, maybe, just maybe, these people know what they're talking about. And we should we should dive into it. And I studied the science of storytelling in business. I studied the art of storytelling in business. And I wrote a book, The Storyteller's Secret, so that I can help people understand why some ideas catch on and most don't, mm-hmm. but some do. And how do people stand apart in their careers and when they're trying to articulate their ideas?
So maybe we could dive into some of the details about what it takes to kind of put together a compelling story. I remember in the beginning of the book, I had a chance to look through it. One of the things you mentioned as you were talking about your passion and how you kind of, when you were at Sequoia Capital with Khosla and Bill Gates and all those other big shots, they had asked you to speak because you had developed a passion for helping people share their own unique message, right, with storytelling. And then you said, it's important to help people find what makes their heart sing, mm-hmm. what makes their heart sing. Can you talk a little bit about that, what that means? To tap into what makes your heart sing and why that's so important within the context of storytelling?
We know that passion in communication, passion is everything.
Right.
But passion itself is sort of an overused term. I mean, what is it? I'm passionate about golf, but we're not talking about golf here today. Right. And right. I would never be able to make a career golf. So, but I'm passionate about it. So I wasn't exactly sure how I could articulate passion. Passion, but I know it. I know it when I see it. I have not met in my 25 years of studying communication. This goes back to school, but I've been studying communication for 25 years. Not one person who I've ever met or who I've ever interviewed who is an inspiring leader. Every single person is very passionate about their topic, mm-hmm. but it's more than that. And it really kind of coalesced for me not too long ago when I was speaking to Michael Moritz, who I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. So Michael Moritz, a venture capitalist, and he invested in Airbnb, Google, Yahoo. I mean, this guy knows what he's doing.
Bunch of small companies, right?
Bunch of small companies. And I say, oh, can you imagine that? He was the first guy to write a check for the Google guys. He met them on a Friday and he invested on a Monday. Wow. Yeah, I think he did okay with that investment. So Michael Moritz told me, Carmine, I don't think passion is the right word. He goes, when I meet some of these extraordinary communicators, it's obsession. It's not passion. It's actually obsession. They are obsessed with their topic. That's all they think about day or night. And I realized I'm obsessed with communication. In fact, I think one of the Amazon reviews of this new book said, Carmine seems obsessed with making people better communicators. And I'm taking that as a compliment.
Love it.
I am obsessed because I see communication everywhere. Mm-hmm. From the minute I wake up in the morning, I start reading the papers and going on the internet, I see a million stories about communication, good communication, failed communication.
Right.
So this whole idea of what makes your heart sing, it's a question I've started asking executives and leaders when I talk to them. And here's how it works. In his last major public presentation, Steve Jobs, who I still considered the world's greatest corporate storyteller, at his last major public presentation, I think it was the iPad, mm-hmm. he paused at the end, and it was very heartwarming, and he said, it's the intersection of technology and liberal arts that makes my heart sing. Mm. And I thought, that's very interesting. So I started doing this exercise, and all of your listeners can do it too. The content of your message that your next presentation will completely change if you start by asking yourself this question. What is it about my product, my idea, my company that makes your heart sing? The answer will be very different from the question, what do you do?
Yeah. Yeah. Or what is your passion? Because oftentimes those are just single word answers where it almost seems like, you know, trying to answer a question like what makes my heart sing requires you to kind of think about and articulate in more than a word, more than even a sentence or two, what that actually means to you, which is probably why it's so powerful.
It's very powerful. And what I found is that it elicits story. Mm-hmm. It elicits a story. So I was working with, or I was asked to advise I won't say the name, but it's a startup, very well-funded startup in the healthcare space. Mm-hmm. And they manage, they try to detect and manage cancer through blood tests, very complex stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I asked the CEO, so what do you do? And the answer was, we detect and manage cancer through blood tests. Oh, okay. In other words, very factual.
Right, right.
What are you passionate about? I'm passionate about patient care and treating patients. Okay, now we're starting to put a face to it. But what makes your heart sing? And I'm always reluctant to ask that question, especially in a big conference room with a bunch of executives.
Right, they're like, what? What are you talking about, man?
Who's this new age guy? You know? So, but what makes your heart sing? And he sat there and he said, well, for example, we were treating a patient who at first was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. She was not given many months to live, and the therapies were not working. All seemed lost. All hope seemed lost. But the physician knew about our blood test, ordered our test, and we detected that it was actually not pancreatic cancer. It was a different type of cancer. They treated her for that. 12 weeks later, she was cancer-free. Or they don't say cancer-free. They say no detectable cancer.
Right.
And then he paused, and he looked around the room, and he said, it's those stories that keep me burning the midnight oil.
Boom.
Boom. And everybody looked at each other because they had never heard that.
Yeah.
They had never heard him say that. So what I'm saying is that if you start asking yourself what makes your heart sing, more often than not, it will elicit
something meaningful, a story.
Meaningful, yeah. Emotion. And the reason why, and now we have to get in the science briefly, the reason why you have to have emotion, it's very well established in the neuroscience literature. Mm-hmm. In order to convince another person of your idea, in order to persuade, you have to appeal to both sides of the brain, the rational, the logical, and the emotional. And we know this very well at this point. So where most people believe they are rational. They believe they're logical. but we're actually not.
Yeah.
We're not. Where emotion wants to take us, that's typically where we go.
Yeah. And I heard a really great thing to interject really quickly was someone once said to me, or maybe I read it somewhere, but they said that we make decisions based on emotion, and then we back up that decision with logic. Kind of like, you know, I see a really, really nice car that I want. I already have a perfectly wonderful car, but I really want this red Corvette now. It just moves me emotionally in so many different ways. So, okay, now let's find a bunch of logical reasons to back up this crazy emotional trigger that's been pulled to want to get this nice shiny red car. So
advertisers have known this for decades. And that's why ads work. Some work better than others, but the good advertisers know this.
Right.
The great screenwriters know this. Did you know that there is a reason why? And I did a lot of research into screenwriting as well, because we can apply it to our business presentations.
Sure. Yeah.
Did you realize, I guess I didn't put two and two together, there's a reason why every commercially successful movie has to have a happy ending. There's a reason why.
Gives you that nice fuzzy feeling.
We are hardwired, and there's science on this. Mm. We are hardwired to love rags to riches type of stories. Mm. We actually need those type of stories because we are wired to find meaning in struggle. Life and nature is such a struggle that we need to find meaning in that struggle.
I think that's a really great point. You talked about that in the book as well, right? where how important it was to ensure that you include a rags to riches story within your own situation. And I guess the question is, what are some steps that somebody could take? Because I know people are listening right now and they're saying or thinking to themselves, well, I mean, I've lived a pretty average life, or I haven't had really any struggles. You know, I grew up in a suburban neighborhood and in the U.S. I'm pretty okay. Of course, I want to be better, but I haven't had any crazy problems.
Mm-hmm.
How could somebody turn that into a way that they communicate it?
Yes, let's talk about that. And by all means, I'm not suggesting that you have to have, you know, you have to expose all the skeletons in your closet.
Right, of course.
You had to have been homeless, a millionaire type of thing.
Right.
But there's a reason why those make good stories.
Yeah.
Okay. There is a reason why, like Howard Schultz, for example, at Starbucks,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure most of your listeners are familiar with his story. He grew up in a Brooklyn housing project,
mm.
and his family was really thrown upside down when his dad was injured at work, and they didn't have health insurance and no income, and it was a very tough time for him. But it underpins that story. The reason why he tells it all the time is because it underpins all of Starbucks' initiatives. For example, giving full-time health benefits to part-time workers.
Right.
So the story is a very good connection. If you have a story of struggle and ultimate success, okay, struggle and redemption, triumph over tension, those stories work very, very well. Now let's talk about how to apply this in business. If you, like you said, middle class, you don't have necessarily that kind of story.
Right.
That's fine. What you need to do is, and here's the whole point of this book, use the components of narrative to present your idea. Because we are wired to think in story, because we've been telling stories for 400,000 years, because we like to receive information in story, it's most effective to present your idea in story.
Right.
One way of doing it, very simple, is steal a page from Hollywood. They kind of know how to do this. Disney's been doing this a long time. They have three-part story structure. Every commercially successful movie, every single one, has a three-part formula. This actually goes back centuries in terms of books. It has a three-part formula as well. If you want to learn to create a transformative story, here are the three parts. The setup, the conflict, the resolution.
The setup, the conflict, the resolution.
So three parts. The setup, the conflict, the resolution. The setup is simply the status quo. The hero's world before the adventure starts.
Mm.
So we can look at maybe Titanic, which is probably something that everybody has seen.
Right.
I'm glad Leonardo finally won his Academy Award.
Yeah, about time, right?
He lost his mind. But in Titanic, you don't care what happens to Rose and Jack until you get to know their characters and where they're from and their goals and their hopes and all that stuff. So that's called the setup. Every movie, the first third has to be the setup. And so in business, the setup is the status quo. If you're pitching a new product, I'm going to make this very practical. Let's say I have a service or a product that I'm pitching to a prospect or a new client. I'm going to do a nice job of painting the status quo. Here's the way the world looks today for my client.
Okay.
And everything looks beautiful, doesn't it? It's the ship of dreams. It's nice. But the act two, and in Titanic, there is a very clear act two, the ship hits the iceberg. Right. Oops, now we have a problem. So act two in business is everything looks nice. You're on the ship of dreams. Oh, but there's an iceberg ahead. Mm-hmm. And you probably don't even see it. Once you enter act two, your client is nodding in agreement. Now they're kind of freaked out, like, oh boy, yeah, you're right. Yeah, that is a problem. How am I going to solve this? The ship's sinking. Act three is the hero.
All right.
Act three is the resolution. How is the hero in business? It's your product. It's you. It's your brand. It's your service. That hero is going to save the day. And that hero is going to make the world a better place for you, your company, your industry, your employees. So that it's a three-act structure.
So it's kind of like, okay, set the context in act one. And then in act two, set up the pain or the problem or the issue. And then in act three, set up your solution.
Set up your solution as the hero. Absolutely. But you need act two. See, act two is the conflict. Every great story has to have a villain.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, it's not a story.
Yeah.
A story, and Steven Spielberg has said, it's too bad that there's so many bad stories out there. They have a beginning, middle, and an end. And he said, that's not a good story. The story has conflict and emotion and drama and characters.
Yeah.
So within those three acts, we could have a lot of fun. You could have a lot of fun communicating your idea in so many different ways, which is why I wrote a book with many different people, from TED speakers to business legends, just to give people an idea of the wide variety of industries or areas in which you could tell stories.
Yeah.
But, so what I mean by story is not necessarily telling a personal story, although that's very powerful. That's why some TED Talks go viral, because they have compelling personal stories.
Right.
That's very important. However, the more important concept is to take the components of narrative, because that's how we think and that's how we like to get information, and use it to pitch your idea.
Very nice. Very nice. What would you say, Carmine, is one of the biggest mistakes that people make when it comes to trying to do that, to communicate their message?
One, they don't tell stories. it's all facts and information.
Right. So, no emotion, no conflict, no solution at the end.
It's all
it's boring.
It's all just, let me just dump a whole bunch of facts on you. It's a data dump.
Yeah.
I'm just going to dump a bunch of facts. So there's a guy named Brian Stevenson who I feature in the book. He's got a whole chapter. Brian Stevenson gave a TED Talk. He's a human rights attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Human rights attorney. Gave a TED Talk that earned the longest standing ovation of any TED Talk in TED's 30-year history.
Right.
Brian Stevenson knows a little bit about communication. He argues and wins cases before the U.S. Supreme Court. He probably knows a little bit more about persuasion than us. Yeah, exactly. So when I talked to him, he said narrative is hugely important in persuasion.
Mm.
Narrative. So when you watch his TED Talk, and I would recommend your listeners just go to TED.com and look up Brian Stevenson, you will find that in 15 minutes, he tells three stories. Three stories that reinforce or back up the data. And they're not necessarily ones about him and growing up and an experience, and others, the other two are about other people. Okay, so those are case studies.
Mm.
And his book, Just Mercy, is full of stories. So it's all story. But what he does very well in public presentations is he tells a story, so he connects with you emotionally, and then he presents the data that applies to that story. Or so in other words, start with a theme. You got to start with a theme. If you have a 15-minute pitch,
mm-hmm.
start with your theme. This is the one thing that you want to get across to your client. Start with, then lead into a story. It could be a personal story. It could be a case study of maybe somebody else who had a similar situation as your client. Then introduce data or numbers or statistics that reinforce the theme.
Okay. Okay.
Go to another
story. I was actually going to ask you about that, because I've heard both sides of the story there. The story.
Yeah.
No pun intended. But like, so, you know, sometimes people will say, well, first present the data to sort of establish credibility and then dive into the story. And then others, like yourself, have said, tell the story first, capture their attention and get them in there and interested, and then use the data to back up the story that you've just told.
My philosophy, and you're right, that's exactly what I suggest, is story data, story data, story data. In fact, in 15 minutes, you have time for three good stories. So three stories. That's not just my opinion. This is what I've realized and what I've learned from speaking to the most persuasive people on our planet today. So, I'm not making this stuff up, right? This is the way it works for these people. So I also like to make it very simple for our listeners. Don't try to reinvent the wheel.
Right.
Just like hit movies, okay? There's a three-act structure. Follow the three-act structure, or do what Bryan Stevenson is doing. You don't have to try to reinvent things,
right?
Because they work really, really well, and they work for a reason. We know that when people hear a story, that it connects with you emotionally because it triggers a rush of chemicals. Those chemicals include dopamine, which make people feel good. Those chemicals include cortisol, which forces you to pay attention. Right. Now, most importantly, according to some scientists who are studying this in the lab, a good story elicits oxytocin.
Yeah.
And oxytocin is the love molecule. That's the one that makes us feel empathy for one another. Mm. It has been shown using people watching stories in, usually like heartwarming or heart-wrenching stories in a lab, when they take a blood draw, I mean, they literally, they take a blood test and they find that after you've seen a real heartwarming story, there's a much higher level of oxytocin in the bloodstream. So in other words, an oxytocin makes you feel empathy for each other. And if we take it one step further, they're actually studying how people with higher levels of oxytocin after they've watched a story tend to give more money to a charity.
Yeah, yeah. I've actually read about that as well. Yeah, if you see somebody, so interesting. You see somebody, say you're walking down the street, you see someone else you do not know, you've never met before in your life, and you just witness them helping an old lady across the street or picking up somebody's purse if it fell on the ground and giving it to them. Actually, studies show that you're whatever percentage more likely to actually go about your day and go and help somebody else simply because of that same biochemical reaction with oxytocin that you were just talking about.
So let me ask you a question. Okay, the rhetorical question for our listeners. And why are we filling PowerPoints with data? Right? Because the data, is not triggering that rush of chemicals. Okay, but of course you need the data, but you need to have the confidence to wrap the data in emotion. Like Brené Brown once said, Brené Brown's a famous researcher. Mm-hmm. She gave a wonderful TED talk, and she said, stories are just data with a soul. Data with a soul.
That's
so wrap stories can wrap that soul around your data. Add some soul to your data.
Add some soul into it. You also said, kind of to go off of what you just said about being confident enough to do that, to wrap your story, to put some soul into the data. You also talk about in the book the importance of telling the story that you have with yourself and making sure that that is an empowering one. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because you gave a couple of really awesome examples. One of them was with the big preacher guy, Joel Osteen, and then the other one was with Tony Robbins. Yep. Could share a little bit about that, because I like that a lot.
I'm glad you do, because that's more the touchy-feely stuff, but it's very important. Part one of the book is called Storytellers Who Ignite Our Inner Fire. And the whole part one is based on reframing the story you tell yourself. Mm. Because I realized after speaking to all of these inspiring leaders that there was a time in their life they didn't believe in themselves.
Right.
So in order for them to become inspiring communicators, they had to reframe their internal narrative. And that's why I believe that the story we tell ourselves about who we are, if you do not believe in yourself and your story and have confidence in your ability to make things happen and to trigger action, nobody else will. Yeah. You mentioned a pastor, Joel Osteen, and I've talked to him a couple of times. It's not a religious book in any way, but certainly he is an influential and motivating speaker.
Yeah, even if you're not a religious person, listening to that guy is actually pretty darn inspiring, because he's really good at what he does.
And he's very good, and just in my own interactions with him, he seems very genuine, and he's been very, very generous and nice to me. So that's you know, that's all I can say, because that's all I know.
If a Ted Haggard situation comes up in the future, not your fault.
Well, you know, the way I consider him, Dean, I really consider Joel Osteen as like our modern day Billy Graham.
Yeah.
And there is no question that Billy Graham inspired generations of people. That guy who was in the book Unbroken and the movie, it was someone who changed his life because he watched a Billy Graham revival meeting, you know. So I do think there's a place for this, absolutely. And so I've interviewed Joel Osteen, and a lot of people don't know the backstory. The backstory is that for 17 years, Joel Osteen did not believe that he had what it takes to preach on a stage.
Wow.
Yeah. And so he was behind the scenes. His dad was a preacher. And, you know, he enjoyed helping his dad out in the church, but he never saw himself as a preacher. And today he sells out Yankee Stadium. I mean, that's extraordinary.
That's insane, yeah.
In 15 years. Oh, by the way, he was also terrified of public speaking.
Yeah.
So here's a guy who in 15 years was shaking the very first time he walked up to the lectern. I mean, absolutely shaking. Mm. And today he sells out stadiums around the world. That's a transformation. Only when he started saying, wait a minute, I do have something to say and people want to hear me.
Yeah.
The only thing that changed is his own thinking.
That's absolutely true.
And I can name so many other people now. I can name Barbara Corcoran, Warren Buffett, Elon Musk, Richard Branson. You know that they were all very afraid of public speaking early in their careers.
Mm.
You know, so again, it's that internal change. You got to have that confidence first, but I hope it's motivating. The reason why I wrote that first part is because I wanted to motivate people that they could get past it as well.
Yeah.
That if you don't have that self-confidence today, you could be selling out stadiums tomorrow. Okay. It's a matter of changing the way you think about yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what would you say, sort of going back into the tactics before we close it out, like what would you say is typically more effective in terms of, you know, beginning a story? Some folks will say, all right, today I'd like to tell you a story about, and then they go blah, 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 blah. And then others will just dive right in. And I've tried both, and I prefer just diving straight into the story and then allowing my main points to kind of unravel as you tell the story. But the question I have is it a bad idea to say, today we're going to talk about XYZ, or today I'd like to share a story with you about XYZ?
Yeah, I don't like setting it up, and it's a little too formal for me. Yeah, I think it must be much more conversational.
Yeah.
So that's why I suggest watch Bryan Stevenson on TED. He does it beautifully. Cool. You know, he said, yeah, you know, when I was 11 years old. Well, actually, first he does set up the theme. He does set up the theme first, and then he kind of naturally blends into. Yeah, it kind of reminds me when I was 11 years old. Mm-hmm. My grandmother pulled me aside, and she said this and this. So in other words, he's using a lesson from his life to reinforce his theme.
Right.
But it happens naturally. But I like setting things up. Let me give you just a quick example, just from my own, because I'm learning how to be a better communicator all the time, I think. I don't think communication is black and white. There's a gray area, and I'm learning something every day. What I found works pretty well is, for example, I spoke at Google not too long ago. And there were a lot of millennials in the audience. Mm-hmm. And the Google story and that whole thing about Michael Moritz investing in Google, it's a great story. So right. I wanted to tell that story to the Google folks, right? Yeah, because a lot of these people are new. They're young. They're millennials. They don't even necessarily know that whole history. They just were hired.
Right.
But I start with the theme, because if people are sitting in an audience where you just have one listener or a prospect or a client, and they don't understand where you're going with the story, I'm not sure if that's very effective either. So I like to set it up with, I walked into Google and I said, hey, thanks for inviting me here today. You know, so many of you are new. I know you're new to Google. I hope you get something out of today. I want to talk to you about the one skill that I think will make you more valuable as you progress in your career. Mm-hmm. And that's storytelling. So in other words, I set up the theme in one sentence so they kind of see where I'm going.
Just a broad understanding of what direction you're headed in, basically.
Just to give people a mental roadmap. Oh, this is where we're going today. And then I said, hey, since we're at Google, let me start with a story, since we're talking about storytelling. Mm-hmm. Two Stanford graduates have an idea they think will change the world. Larry and Sergey. They walk into the offices of Sequoia Capital, and here's what happened next. Right. So, boom. And so I naturally kind of weaved into that story. And then, by the way, the story only needs to take 30 seconds, 1 minute, and then you go back to the nuts and bolts or the data or your proof points. Here's a big lesson, and I'm learning this since I wrote The Storyteller's Secret, because now I'm hearing a lot of stories. Please don't make your stories 5 minutes, long-winded, convoluted, confusing. If you just ramble on and on and on, that's actually not very effective. It's more damaging than telling a really short, succinct story that you've sort of rehearsed that reinforces your main point.
Yeah. Confuse them, you lose them, right?
Yeah, because a lot of people say, oh, yeah, I've got a great story, Carmine. 10 minutes later, I'm listening
like, what?
To the story. I'm bored.
What's going on? You're at a carnival? And what's the point? What's going on?
So again, Bryan Stevenson at TED, he can tell a great story in 1 minute because he tells the same stories over and over. But they still sound conversational. And Bryan taught me something very interesting. He said, regardless of, even if you're giving a presentation to more than one person in a meeting or in a conference, always think as though you are having a conversation with a friend over dinner. I'm like, okay, I get that. We're just having a nice little discourse, a little conversation. And that will make you seem so much more authentic and approachable and personal.
Yeah. Yeah. Less fake if you're just talking to one person and it's a friend of yours and you guys are just having a drink or two over dinner. So cool. Very nice. Very nice. And do you have any ideas as far as closing goes? Because I know that that's one of the worst, most feared, or most difficult, rather, ways for people to kind of close it out. How do you close out a story in the most powerful possible way?
A happy ending.
Make it warm and fuzzy.
You know, exactly.
Yeah. Inspiring.
You need to make sure that somebody is transformed. Okay. Nice. Hollywood screenwriters have known this for decades. You need to make sure that the hero's world is transformed.
Yeah.
You need to paint a picture of a better world. So even though at the end of Titanic, you know, no big spoiler since we've all seen it, the ship sinks.
Right. Yeah.
Poor Leonardo, you know, is frozen out there. But at the very last line of the movie is one of the last lines is Rose, you know, the beautiful Kate Winslet saying, you know, Jack not only saved me that day, he saved me in more ways than one. Okay. So her life was transformed.
Yeah.
So the point is, and that is a screenwriting trick, the hero's life must be transformed. So you need to paint a picture of a beautiful world made better by your idea or your product.
Very nice.
Yeah. So always end with a happy ending.
Awesome.
We don't change the formula.
Stick with the program. Don't reinvent the wheel.
Hey, Winston Churchill. I've got a chapter on. I don't go too much into history. I love history.
Right.
But there's a lot of in business books. History doesn't work that well because if people want to learn history, they buy a history book. So I have one chapter though on Winston Churchill because he was a brilliant.
Oh, yeah, he was wonderful.
And he was very cool. He was great at like making things concise and simple words and all that. He always he started with like, oh my gosh, the Nazis are coming, the world is ending, but by the end of every major speech it was so positive,
there was hope.
This is what the world is going to look like when we win. Yeah. It's a very good lesson.
And by the way, for the listeners, Carmine profiles I think something like 50 people in this new book, so I'm sure there's something in there for everybody.
That's what I try to do, something in it for everybody. Thanks for mentioning that.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Carmine, on to the final question, which is the same question that I ask every single one of my guests here on the show. And that is, what does it mean to you specifically, Carmine, to lead a meaningful life?
Helping people make this world a better place.
Very nice.
that gives me meaning. So that comes back to why I'm obsessed with communication, because I see so many great ideas to maybe to lead the country, to build a company, to engage employees, to make the world a better place. And yet so few ideas actually capture the public's imagination.
Yeah.
How do ideas catch on and how they don't? That's my mission in life.
Very nice. Well, Carmine, thank you so much for being here. Before we go, if you could, let our listeners know how they could connect with you if they're interested in learning more about you and your work, picking up your books. Where can they find you?
We have a robust newsletter now that goes out every week. It's a great way to keep in touch with me. Just visit my website, carminegallo.com. On Twitter, I'm at Carmine Gallo. So if you just remember that name, it's a good Italian name. Not too hard to forget. But carminegallo.com is probably the best way, and you can keep in touch with me through there.
Okay, excellent. And for you folks listening, I'll link all this stuff up, including the resources, the TED Talk he mentions, the book, all that stuff, as well as his website over at meaningfulhq.com or over at getflashnotes.com. So you can find everything there on our resource page, the show notes page. So until next time, again, thank you, Carmine, for being here. And for you folks at home, if you're listening, you're driving, wherever you are, remember to go out there every single day and live like you give a damn. Yo, it's Dean. Listen, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the podcast. If you found this episode inspiring, or if anything else you've heard on the show has helped you or made an impact on your life in any way, I'd really appreciate it if you showed me a little love with a quick review over on iTunes or on whichever podcast platform you tune into the show on. Every single review helps us reach and inspire more people to live like they give a damn. Listen, if you've got self-help questions of your own that you'd like me to answer live on the podcast, hit me up over at meaningfulhq.com. You can submit them over on the contact page, or you can just shoot your questions directly to me at questions@deanbakari.com. Thanks again so much for subscribing, sharing, and tuning into the show. I've said it before, I'll say it again. It's because of you and tens of thousands of other listeners from around the world tuning in every single week, week after week, day after day, that we are able to continue creating content to help you crush it and make an impact in your life and at work. So thank you for being part of this and continuing to share the podcast with your friends, your family, and anyone else you think it could help. Until next time, this is Dean Bakari telling you to go out there every single day and live like you give a damn.